Morton's Law Podcast, back with another episode here on this May 1st, 2022. How's everybody doing out there? Thank you for checking out another episode. I greatly appreciate it. Don't forget to check me out on Twitter, Morton's_Law. Over here watching the NBA playoffs. A lot to talk about with the NFL draft happening the last few days. And of course, the NBA playoffs. Going to get into wrestling. A lot to talk about. Wow, this is a wild finish here in Memphis. Late fourth quarter. Tied game. Draymond Green already ejected in the second quarter like a meathead. But, yeah, it's going to go down to the wire here in the last 90 seconds. So, what's in the news? If you haven't checked this out, listen, I can't do it any justice by giving you quotes or certain things that have happened during this trial. But this Johnny Depp Amber Heard is a must-see. It's just must-see. It's absolutely bananas. The things that Depp has done in the courtroom, basically mocking the lawyer of Heard the whole time. It's like you have to go check these clips out. I hope somebody just puts together a montage of all the Johnny Depp courtroom. I mean, just every day there's something new with him. It's just brilliant. I mean, he really should get an Oscar for this performance. Now, I don't know who's telling the truth or who's lying. Now, the judge will determine that in the long run, but it's bananas. Dr. Fauci had to walk back on some words recently. He came out during the week and said that we are out of the pandemic phase. And then, I want to say 24, if not 48 hours later, he said, no, that's not the case. Now, I don't know if he's claiming to be misquoted or if he was misunderstood, misinterpreted, however, but that just doesn't sound very good to have to clarify that. You clearly said it, and now you're saying this. And listen, the cases have obviously dropped. Deaths have come down. I mean, still nothing to be, like, happy about. You know, still, we're approaching a million deaths. But we can't deny that the numbers are coming down. However, to be fair, I mean, obviously his statement was premature, but until all the people, either the unvaxxed die off or everyone gets vaxxed, this is going to be an ongoing issue, and we're going to continue to have peaks and valleys. So it is what it is, but I mean, the numbers are coming up right now with the sub-variant, especially here in New York City where I live, and we've been having cases around 5 to 10,000 again, which had been really all the way down in the low thousands. I have a serious question for everybody out there. How's your asshole doing? Well, if you own stock, if you have any kind of future retirement plan or anything of that matter, your asshole is bleeding like mine has been because it's been a brutal market the last week or so. I mean, unbelievable. I just can't believe how much money I've lost. I'm sure some people out there have way more than I have in their accounts, but I mean, I know this past week, the market took the biggest hit it's had since March of 2020 when the pandemic started. So, I mean, we're hoping for recovery at some point. Look, here's the thing I'll say. When you do the research, when you go all the way back to 2008 and the major crash that the market did sustain, it's always found a way to recover. It just takes sometimes longer than others. But for the majority of the years, you're going to get an 8 to 11% return. And, you know, look, even in 2020 when it went down, the rest of the year, the recovery was insane. So we still have another 6 months now with inflation and other things that play a part that I won't claim to know about. So I'm not going to get into details on those things. But hopefully it will come back before the year's up. And the good news that came out this week for me and many others, millions in fact, is that after canceling about 10 different variations of student loan debt, it's now on the table. Biden is finally going to address the other student loans out there, pretty much the regular student loans, if you will. And now the talk initially, which was to do 10,000, of course, the Democrats want him to cancel everything or at least 50,000. He's claiming that he's going to make his decision this week. And we're going to know if the 10,000 is in fact, although now there's even discussion that people who have a wealthy income will not get the cancellation like the poor people like me. So I don't know. I don't know how to feel about that, but you know, that $10,000 will help me a lot. And I'm sure it'll help a lot of Americans out there who are just getting by. And look, let's be honest. We essentially print money and send it to other countries, such as Ukraine, to help them. But yet people like me and others are just above the poverty line, and some even worse. So what does that say about our country? Will Smith news. Some Will Smith news. He had another project canceled. And this time they're claiming, again, it's not from the slap heard round world. It's actually the sequel to the movie Bright, a Netflix-produced movie that came out several years back. And listen, I'll be honest. I said, when I read this article, I said, sequel? Did you see that first movie? That was a piece of shit. I don't know how they ever considered a sequel. Now, I guess Netflix just goes off how many people watched it, and that's how they view it successful. But I know the critics dumped all over that movie. I liked the first 15 minutes, and then it just became a train wreck. So, yeah, not going to care about the sequel. So, like I said, we got the NBA playoffs to talk about, NFL draft coming up next, pro wrestling later on, Morton's Law podcast back after this. Tune in every Monday night at 10 p.m. for the Absolute Truth Show on Blog Talk Radio. Join the Hot Rod, Sean Black, and Lady T as they give you the truth on current events, politics, and everything in between. That's Monday nights at 10 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/theabsolutetruth100, where they tell it like it is. Welcome back to Morton's Law Podcast. Thank you again for joining me. Last 30 seconds here, I didn't see who, but somebody just buried a three for the Warriors to give them a one-point lead. And on the ensuing possession, John Morant lost the ball as he drove to the lane. Then the Warriors played keep away for a good 10 seconds, and Memphis finally fouled with 11 seconds ago. Now the Warriors at the line with a chance to move it up to a three-point lead. So the NFL draft Thursday night happens. I watch the ABC coverage because I think I've told you before I don't have cable, so I got the college coverage, and I like Herb Street. I like all those guys, Pollock. They're good guys, and you have McShay on there. Now, listen, you know, you can question the other celebrity guests that they did have. I'll talk about that later. So the first overall pick, I mean, I don't know if this is a good thing, especially the second pick. You know, when you go to Jacksonville and Detroit, how excited can you be? But, hey, I guess you're getting paid, and this is your life dream to be in the NFL. So you have to stay there at least for your first contract. And Trayvon Walker out of Georgia, I think, 15 Bulldogs went in this draft, which is crazy. I mean, this was, they were loaded, obviously, national champions. And then Hutchinson went to the Lions. And then Stingley from LSU went to the Texans. No surprise there. Listen, former Bears coach Lovie Smith, obviously now the head coach of the Texans, defense-oriented, and it makes sense that he would go there. Now, the Jets and Giants each had two picks in the top 10. The Jets take Sauce Gardner, lockdown corner from Cincinnati. I mean, that's just a great pick by them. I mean, listen, you can question the competition in that conference, although of course they did make the playoffs. Listen, they played Notre Dame, played Alabama. They did lose. Now, I don't have the numbers in front of me of who he defended in that game, but Alabama didn't light them up with the offense. I mean, they did run the game on the ground successfully because Cincinnati's front seven couldn't do anything. So I'm sure they watched game film of that. And of course, he was facing guys like Jameson Williams, who's a beast. And I guess he did well enough in that. That would, you know, of course, with his other performances throughout the year. So good for the Jets. I hope that works out. The Giants then took stud defensive end Kayvon Thibodeau at number 5. And then at 7, took my guy from Alabama, Evan Neal, who now will save the life of Danny Disappointment. He'll no longer have to run for his life. That's good news for Giants fans, and you had to make that pick. I mean, just, it was a no-brainer at that point. Then the Jets came back at number 10 and got OSU wideout Garrett Wilson. So, I mean, listen, of course, quarterback Wilson, the Wilson connection. Jury's still out on the quarterback. Showed some gumption at the end of the season, especially that 50-yard touchdown run, playing with a lot of backups. I mean, they have guys there now, Elijah Moore, Berrios, and now you add Wilson to this, along with Corey Davis. Hey, they have weapons. They drafted this running back in the second round, which I questioned, but then people said, hey, calm down, relax, you know. I always say, hey, is there better people available on the board for your needs? And they said, oh, well, now people are saying Carter isn't going to be the guy anymore, and the guy they drafted from Iowa State. And then, you know, typically what I do is I say, hey, but, you know, he plays in a conference where defense is optional. But, I mean, look, I'm not going to knock that pick. I don't know enough about it. So then at the 12th pick, another Ohio State wide receiver went. Chris Olave went to New Orleans. Listen, that quarterback, I mean, these guys are talented, no question about it. But I know Olave played a lot more with Justin Fields. Of course, as a senior, they both played with C.J. Stroud, who is going to be a top 10 pick next year, if not top 3. He's that talented as a quarterback, along with Bryce Young from Alabama and Will Anderson. Those could be the top 3 picks in next year's draft. I'm sure there are other guys that I'm not going to mention right now. But at number 12, Jameson Williams, who, of course, got injured in the national championship game, went to the Lions. So to give something to Jared Goff there. Now, this is where the draft got a little bizarre for me. Just a little bizarre. Because the Pittsburgh Steelers gave money to Mitchell Trubisky. And from what I've read and how it came across to me was he didn't go to the Giants because they said he was going to have to compete for the starting job with Daniel Jones. Something he didn't want to do. So as the heir apparent, at least what we thought, to Ben Roethlisberger going into Pittsburgh with Mason Rudolph there, who clearly they didn't believe in enough that they would bring Trubisky in. Now the Steelers go ahead and draft Kenny Pickett from Pittsburgh at 20 in the first round. And you're like, wait, what? I mean, that's not exactly a vote of confidence. That's just like, I mean, did Trubisky have some unknown workout that we're not aware of that just changed their minds about him? That's just, I mean, and what was he thinking when that pick was announced? I mean, it's very similar to when you look at this draft and how Lamar Jackson went on Twitter and did what the, you know, WTF once they traded away Hollywood Brown to the Cardinals. I mean, just a lot of bizarre moves here. But listen, if the Steelers want this guy to compete, now they're saying he's going to compete with Trubisky for the starting job. They haven't named him as the starter. Of course, he's a rookie, so there's going to be some growing pains, but I mean, Trubisky now, of course, will be looking over his shoulder even if he wins the job. So, little room for error. But I guess, hey, listen, he didn't exactly, albeit he did go to the playoffs twice with the Bears. Hasn't won a game. Well, we can blame the double doink on that, let's be fair, on one of those games. So, I mentioned the ABC coverage before. It was really bizarre because they just kept putting celebrities out there. Like, I don't know, C and D listers, if you will. Some of them anyway. Like, you get Chris Angel. Then you get Michael Bublé, Sebastian Maniscalco, and Ice Cube. Yeah. I mean, look, I love those college guys, but when they added these guys to the mix, it was like, I don't want to hear from them. That's not the analysis I'm looking for. So, that was that. The Chicago Bears didn't have a first-round pick. And I can't tell you much of anything of their other picks. So I'm just like, my hands are up in the air. I mean, they got a safety, a cornerback, defensive end, a wide receiver who's 25 but runs a 4.3. Just a lot of uncertainty with this draft. Don't know what to make of it. I don't know. By the way, Golden State just held on to win 117-116. It looked like John Morant had a shot at the end and missed. So 1-0 Warriors in this series. Best of 7, stealing one on the road. It's kind of odd saying the Warriors playing on the road as a 3 seed, but they are. Where was I? So, yeah, I mean, I guess we can transition right now to the NBA playoffs. Celtics and Bucks happened earlier today as I record this on Sunday evening. And listen, everyone talked about the Celtics defense. And it was great. We know what they did against Durant, how they shut him down. And coming into this game, everyone says, oh, no Middleton. People are saying Celtics in four, Celtics in five. They're going to dominate this series because they're going to show Giannis looks he's never seen before like they did with Durant. And I went, wait a second. The major difference, though, in this round is that unlike the Nets, the Bucks have two Caucasians who can shoot from 25 feet. So whether you collapse on Giannis, you don't want to over-collapse because now you're giving these guys good looks, along with Holiday, who can shoot the three, and Bobby Portis. They have more weapons than the Nets. And sure enough, listen, in this first half, the Bucks, their defense was the story. The Celtics couldn't get any good looks. Everything was from three. What the Bucks do is they make you shoot threes. They contend the corners, and they say, hey, go take the wings. And the Celtics, wow, did they shoot threes? Way too many, in fact. The Bucks had a big second quarter. They shot 10 for 20 from three in the first half. And like I mentioned, that's Celtic D. But hey, the Bucks D, the story here. In the first half, Brown and Tatum, a combined 5 of 18. Then with the Bucks up 10 at the half, in the third quarter, there was a potential. Listen, the game was pretty much even throughout the third until at the 3:37 mark when Giannis, which could have been the turning point in this game but ended up not being the case, picked up a foolish foul 30 feet from the basket trying to steal the ball from Jason Tatum. So he ended up on the bench for the last 3:37 of the third with the Bucks up 7. Now, horrible decision by Giannis without question. However, the good news for that 3:37, the Bucks somehow managed to go plus one without Giannis on the court. So that was you could say that was a turning point in the game for the Celtics, where they had a chance to go on a big run and didn't do so. So going into the fourth, up 8. But real quick, just a sidebar here. Everybody knows this is no secret. Continuation in the NBA is a joke. It really is. Certain players can just get away with anything at any point and still go to the line. And you're like, how is that a shooting foul? There was one play I'm watching where White on the Celtics goes left. He gets bumped, not even in the shooting motion, and then just throws the ball at the rim and he's shooting two free throws. I'm like, how is that a shooting foul? He was never in the motion. Nor could you argue that he beat the defender where he was in a position to get a layup, so you want to reward him with two foul shots regardless. I mean, not many people are going to go to their weak side and then shoot an off-balance shot 8 feet from the basket. That's rare. So he wasn't in the motion. That's just, again, mindless. But, I mean, like, continuation to me in terms of referees and how they call the game is as bad as the block charge call, which is, I mean, they get it wrong more than they get it right. Both calls. It's really bad. So Giannis comes back into the game, and the Bucks dominated the fourth quarter. Absolutely dominated. Giannis with a triple-double. I think he had 23, 13, and 12. Didn't shoot well from the floor. 9 for 25. I mean, Celtics still played good D in this game. I mean, the Bucks won 101-89. The Celtics were the problem. They couldn't get the offense going. Tatum and Brown combined 10 for 31 from the floor. The Bucks actually had four players with double-digit rebounds. Four. Held the Celtics to 33% from the floor. And here's the key number. Ready for this? The Bucks forced the Celtics to shoot 50 threes in this game. I think they were 18 for 50 from three. That's insane. They basically dared them to shoot the three. And they kept doing it. So for game two, the Celtics have to find a way Tuesday night to get better looks either inside or mid-range, because you don't want to be just out there living on the wings, because as we know, the wings are a lower percentage than the corners. So kudos to the Bucks stealing game one, and a lot of Celtic fans are miserable right now. So I mentioned Draymond Green getting ejected in this Memphis game, but how about Memphis with that comeback in Minnesota to win game six on the road? There's been a lot of big wins on the road in this playoff, especially closeout games. Because I'll talk about Chris Paul in a second. He did it in New Orleans And Dallas did it in Utah. Big road performances by a lot of playoff teams. Of course, the Sixers also in Toronto closed out. So just impressive across the board. Speaking of the Sixers, well, first let me go to Durant. Because here's the thing. Durant, we talked about him shooting 11 shots in game three. And you knew there was going to be some kind of adjustments. Now, I don't want to get technical and say what adjustments were made because I can't tell you. But all of a sudden, Durant could find his shot. Okay, he could find his shot. He put up 31 field goal attempts in game four to no avail. They still lost. But it's just mind-blowing to me how all of a sudden he could figure out how to get a shot off in four but not in game three. And the Nets get swept. And that's going to be, I don't know what they're going to do that offseason. I mean, Kyrie said he's going to come back. I don't know. Do they want to keep him? Do you want Kyrie Irving on this team next year? I think Kyrie Irving's stock has dropped so far. It's going to be hard to get rid of that guy. It's going to be really hard to get rid of that guy. So, and kudos, Sixers. Listen, they were up 3-0, looking like a sweep. And they lost game 4 and 5. And then they had to go. Listen, losing game 5 is somewhat devastating because you think you're going to close out at home after you drop game 4. It happens so many times in the playoffs. That fourth game, the home team just finds a way to eke one out and they don't get swept. But then game 5, you come home and you put it on them and you beat them up bad. But that didn't happen. The Raptors came out and smothered the Sixers. They couldn't get anything going. Harden had a horrible game. They kept him beat in check. Scottie Barnes, Van Vliet didn't even play and they still won game 5. And Siakam, OG had a big game, and they went home for game 6. And I remember talking to people who are Sixers fans, people who are Harden fans. People were nervous. People were really nervous because if they forced a game 7, I mean, that would have been a nail biter just because of the, I don't know how the Sixers would have responded to a game 7. But thankfully for them, leading by 1 at the half, 62-61, both teams shot really well from the floor in the first half. Something happened at halftime. I don't know what Doc said. I don't know if it was Doc. I don't know if the teammates just got together and said, okay, enough is enough. But they flipped the switch. They turned it on. And they blew out the Raptors in that third quarter. And they went up to win by, I think, 25 or 30. It was just a destruction in the second half. But then they get this news of Embiid. So let's see what happens with Embiid. And I don't know. That's just, you know, obviously it looks good for the Heat to win that series now easily because I don't trust James Harden to put a team on his back. I mean, you know, listen, guys like Maxey and Harris can step up and be productive. So I don't want to just say, oh, they're going to get destroyed. I mean, they could play competitively and lose close games in the fourth quarter to Miami. But I don't know. Without Embiid, we're going to see what happens there. So, yeah, and I mentioned Chris Paul earlier. Listen. 14 for 14 from the floor in game 6 in New Orleans. That's impressive. The man's 36 and he's still dominating games like this. And by the way, Booker is back. Now, it may take him a game or two to get his legs. He didn't play well in game 6, but they didn't need him cuz Paul was dominant. He said, "That's it. Let's go." And look, when you watch the Warriors, listen. The Warriors don't look like the Warriors from yesteryear. They're very beatable. Don't get me wrong, Klay is starting to look like Klay, but not as consistent as he once was. Then you don't have that. I mean, they still play great defense. I'm not saying they don't, but I don't think Draymond is at that level anymore. So they look beatable where Phoenix isn't going to fear playing them. That's for sure. If Phoenix does advance in the next round, which is not going to be easy because of what Dallas did. Now, I mean, you can say whatever you want about Utah, but I mean, that's going to be a tough series for Phoenix. Listen, these playoffs are exciting. There's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of good games, a lot of good series. And I don't know. I mean, anything could happen in terms of, of course, I would lean towards Phoenix and Golden State in the Western Finals. But I mean, hey, why can't Dallas? Listen, let's talk about Utah for a second. Utah, they come home down 3-2. And of course, 2-2 game 5, they got blown out. They come home game 6. It's a competitive game. They're down a few points at the end. And they just fall apart. And they had opportunities. They had many opportunities. In fact, at the end of the game, Donovan Mitchell didn't even get the last shot. It was Bogdanovich. And I don't know what play was drawn up. I don't want to say I didn't see it, so I don't know where Mitchell was on the court. But I want to get the ball in Mitchell's hands down 2 points like that. So the story is now that he's going to get traded. Some way, somehow, he's gone. And then that head coach, Quinn Snyder, is also looking to get out. And I don't – listen, I've always said this, and it's ad nauseum now. It's a broken record. When they brought Mike Conley on board, I was like, you're not doing anybody any favors here. We know about his injury history. And, of course, he missed that big shot in the playoffs last year that rimmed out, in which they cost them a series, and they don't win in the playoffs. It's like the league figured out the Utah Jazz because they play good defense, but they don't have any reliable scorers other than Mitchell. I mean, we know Gobert is a good rebounder, but he doesn't really give you anything on the offensive side unless it's rebound, putback, stuff like that. So they're going to end up blowing that up. I don't know if the rumor is of the Knicks. I don't know what the Knicks will trade. I don't know what Utah is going to ask for, but it'll be a lot of fun to see. I mean, look, I don't want to say Mitchell is a dog. I hate to label a guy like that because he's still relatively young. His playoff experience is minimal. He hasn't won a first round yet, but I mean, it's got to be tough to carry a team on that, you know, when a lot of people have two, sometimes three stars, and he's barely got anyone else to help him. So I can get him checking out to a degree. I would just hope going forward he doesn't show any more of a dog in him, because then you're stuck with that guy. That's the NBA playoffs. Listen, Major League Baseball, not much to talk about. It's still early, so I'm not going to talk about where people, you know, projections and all this other stuff. All I'll say is Mets and Yankees are in first place. That's it. Yankees won again. They came back today, won 6-4. Mets play tonight in first place. And I know a lot of people who will be miserable if the Mets can make the World Series. And if they ever beat the Yankees, I think people will be doing the Thelma and Louise off the Barrazzano here. I mean, people will be sick to their stomach if Buck Showalter won a World Series in a Met uniform. Oh, God, would that be brutal. Yeah, that's actually on the table. That could happen. Hey, look, the Angels actually look good for once, okay? They you know, having Syndergaard, who now I think is hurt again, or is he sick? I'm not sure. But they actually look good for once, and Trout is healthy, knock on wood. Who knows how long that lasts. But they have, and they're in first place, so they're decent. But in the rest of the American League, I don't know. There's a lot. You know, Toronto's good. No, I'm not going to say Toronto isn't good. There's still uncertainty in the rest of that league. National League, look, we know what the Dodgers are. The Giants pitching is incredible. Milwaukee's going to be around. But the Mets, you know, hey, listen, with the Dodgers' history in these playoffs, anything is possible. So the Mets could get there. I have some Mets fans telling me they're going to the World Series. I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Are you aware of this team and what happens to them in circumstances once we get to July and August? And listen, DeGrom's still not there. And we don't know what other injuries could hit this team during the course of the year. No one. That's the variable of sports. We don't know what can happen to a team, how many key players you can lose. You've seen it with the Yankees, losing so many players during the course of the last 3 years. And still getting to the playoffs and into the deeper rounds, despite injuries. So, look, here's the good part. The Mets have a manager who's not going to listen to all the numbers and the nerds with the analytics. He's going to go on gut. So if a pitcher's out there, although let's be fair, that did backfire on the Mets in the World Series with Harvey going out there for the ninth inning. And Buck may be the guy that would have done the same thing. We don't know. I mean, I don't know. You know, Buck is in that position. Is he going to a closer there? Or does he want Harvey on the mound also in that ninth inning? But guys like Buck and Mattingly, of course, they're actually in second place right now, Miami, because the Braves are off to a rough start without Freddie Freeman. Acuna's on his way back. So, listen, long season, like I said, let's not write anybody off or give anybody too much accolades at this early stage. So, you can digest that. Yankees and Mets World Series, as some people think. We're going to come back on the other side. We're going to talk AEW Dynamite and some other wrestling. Morton's Law Podcast coming back after this.
Understand.
Morton's Law Podcast back for this final segment here. We're going to talk about wrestling. I don't know if I discussed this last week. I don't remember if I talked about the merger with Discovery and the Warner Media, so I apologize if I'm talking about it again. But there was a lot of uncertainty in terms of what would happen with AEW. And there's a lot of discussion regarding the scripted programs that they have on TBS and TNT and their fate and the possibility of cancellations and how some shows have already been shown the door. And now there's even more uncertainty after people not going too crazy saying, oh, AEW is not going to be there. Like we remember if you revisit history with WCW and how that merger caused WCW to no longer be on the Turner networks. So now you go 20 years later, which is pretty amazing that it's 20 years almost. And now we have the same situation with another merger. And, you know, I think Meltzer reported that they're going to decide soon on what's going to happen. And of course, here's the good news. AEW doesn't cost the network a lot of money, so it doesn't hurt them. But again, it's all about one person. And that's all it took last time was one person to say, I don't want wrestling on my network. They want to be more sports-based. That's a discussion. Look, they have TNT. They have the NHL Network. I don't know if they can try to get baseball or whatever. But, I mean, listen. It's unknown. So, as for now, AEW is still there. But we'll see. Let's hope for the best with that. So, let's get into AEW Dynamite. That happened this Wednesday night from Philadelphia. The home of Brotherly Love, a.k.a. ECW. And Savage fans. So the show started. All right, we talked about this last week going in, how excited I was to see in this Owen Hart Foundation tournament. This was a qualifying contest. It was Dax against Cash, FTR one-on-one, and we expected it to tear the house down and be incredible. And going in, I was with the pom-poms. I was for the first time in a while excited to see a match because I knew they would bring it. As the match started, they did the great chain wrestling. They did some of the psychology. They teased it where Cash wasn't happy, where I think he got poked in the eye or something accidental. And then he pushed Dax, and it looked like they were going to fight. And then it just turned into and continued into a wrestling match. They go to commercial break. They come back. They have some good exchanges. A lot of a couple false finishes, not too many. They worked. Listen, it was a really good match. And the end, Dax ended up winning. And I'll be honest, it was a really good match, but it was underwhelming to me. I wasn't blown away by anything that they did. And not saying I need to, of course, you know me, I don't need to see any spot fest. So I don't know. I felt like, I don't want to say they didn't click, because of course they did. Although there was that one moment where they had that little slip up on the pause with the backslide. But I mean, listen, mistakes happen. It is what it is. But I'm sure some people gave it 25 stars, but I didn't love it. It was good. It was good. So Punk was actually on commentary for this match. And when the match concluded, Punk, then all of a sudden we get this graphic on the screen that says CM Punk versus Hangman Adam Page, double or nothing for the world title. And I'm like, what? This just came out of nowhere. Like, no, there's never been really a tease aside from Punk and Hangman being face-to-face recently, which made people speculate. You knew that was inevitable. I mean, look, Punk has won pretty much all of his matches aside from the one MJF match, in which you could argue he lost twice. But, so, I later learned that, now Punk came to the ring with the mic and did a little promo about Hangman Page, and we later learned that Hangman was not present. And the show actually had to be rewritten heavily because they were going to do an angle involving the two. And Paige unfortunately suffered from COVID. So I don't know his status and going forward and how long he'll be out for. But that's what they did. So listen, that's going to be exciting. Paige and Punk. I've been saying it. I'd be shocked if the title doesn't change hands. I think it's almost inevitable. So we'll see how it plays out. Not to go throughout the whole show, but a couple things more so than recently in terms of things that stood out to me. So we get this Jericho Appreciation Society and Kingston along with formerly LAX Santana and Ortiz in the ring in what was going to be a meeting of some kind without violence. No physical violence. We're going to just talk out our problems, if you will. And it was like, I like to call it a meet and greet. Or, if you remember, this was actually reminiscent of the parlay that the Pinnacle had with the Inner Circle, where there was also a meeting before the physical confrontation, which was just like, what? What are we doing here? So they have the tables and the chairs set up. Normally, I love everything Eddie Kingston does. I always talk about the realest man in the room. He's legit. He makes wrestling look real. His promos are amazing. And this is not so much on him. Now, I love the part when he came out and said, I hate this crap. Sports entertainment. Let's just go. Let's fight. I don't care if it's 3 against 5. That was fun. But this segment ended up being way too long and was drawn out forever. I mean, and plus, listen, he's from the streets. Eddie Kingston is legitimately from the streets in Yonkers. And it's just like they agree to a meeting without violence. Yet he's been yelling the words on site. On site, Chris Jericho, on site. I don't care if you're with your family. I don't care. You know what I mean? So he says on site. And then please tell me the consequences. What would happen to them if they happen to just attack JAS, beat them down, and then go, oh, well, we lied. We lied. We weren't going to adhere to the physical confrontation or the non-physical confrontation. And we did tell you on site. So what were you expecting? So they didn't do that. It was actually more cordial than you would expect. Although at the end, Kingston said, do you know what a hit is? And Jericho cowered in the corner and looked surprised and looked like, oh, no, what's going to happen? So, I mean, they left without, like I said, without physical confrontation. Then later in the show, we see, they cut to the back where, of course, everything happens in the back. And you see Santana and Ortiz laid out. And then now everyone from JAS has Kingston. And there's Jericho. And we get a fireball because everyone loves to do stuff that happened from Memphis or other companies back in the territory days. So now Kingston is, I imagine, blind. I don't know what's going to be, what he's going to look like. We'll talk about more of that later. So Wardlow, listen, they're milking this as long as they can milk it. Obviously, we're going to get Wardlow and MJF at Double or Nothing. That's a fact. That, I mean, it's, anyone can see that. So they're milking the hell out of this. So Wardlow comes out and he absolutely, listen, Lance Archer is a former champ in this company, okay? I mean, he just, Lance Archer had almost no offense. So he destroys him with the Powerbomb Symphony. And then later in the show, they cut back and MJF's doing a promo. And he happens to talk about his next opponent. He calls him Piggy. Piggy, your next opponent. And he says, and you can't teach that. And then the crowd popped because everyone knew that it was going to be Big Cass, a.k.a. what, KazXL is his name in Impact. I don't know if he's still there or if, you know, with the Forbidden Door, he can come over and do work here in AEW. So that's going to be that. And of course, he's going to beat him too. Wardlow's not going to lose anytime soon. So I don't want to dump on this because, you know, it's the women wrestlers and I respect their art. Again, I a lot of women can go. I'm not going to say that. Some people dump on women wrestling no matter what. I don't do that. But if you're going to do a Philly street fight, think about this. A Philly street fight. It should never be Deeb and Sheeta. You get Deeb and Sheeta in a Philly street fight. Meanwhile, you have Jericho Appreciation Society, Kingston, and Santana and Ortiz doing a non-physical confrontation in the ring when they could have had a Philly street fight. How crazy would that have been throughout the building? Imagine that. They're fighting throughout the crowd. Crowd would have went nuts for that. I mean, it didn't even have to have a finish either. You don't have to have anybody get pinned. You just have the brawl, and then finally the ref throws it out. We've seen that. I mean, ECW made a company off of that, okay? Some matches just never ended. It just... I remember watching some of the brawls with the Dudley Boys and Raven's Flock and other people involved where there would be, like, multiple segments of them just brawling without a referee. It was just crazy chaos. And the fans would all eat that apart. I mean, ate that alive, but... I mean, yeah, and they wanted to go Deeb and Sheeta, and that's it. That was this Philly street fight. Look, the only thing they got right there was that Deeb won. Because they've been pushing her as a badass, so she won. And I'm going to guess that she's going to be in line for the next title match against, who we haven't seen in a little while, Thunder Rosa. That makes sense. Now we get this main event. Scorpio Sky against Sammy Guevara, now, of course, with Ty Conti. And are they, I have a question, are they doing the best of seven without telling us they're doing a best of seven? Because this is now, what, the third match? And I mean, look, Sammy is essentially a heel now. The crowd's booing the hell out of him. They don't like the fact that he has the hot girl and they're being They're being arrogant. There's no question about that. And listen, Sammy almost killed himself again, okay? It's scary. It's going to be to the point where he's not going to land so luckily, and he's going to be out, God forbid, paralysis. I mean, let's hope not, but the risks he takes is just, I mean, you know, look, he's a cat with nine lives at this point. I think he's getting close to using up all those nine lives. And one day he's going to land on that head, and God forbid. So, just a frightening spot off that ladder. I mean, they had to go check on him and everything. I mean, it's just, ugh. So, my thought was this. I thought with Sammy getting heat the way he has with the crowd, that you have the heel win here and would retain the title. However, to AEW's credit, being unpredictable, the finish shocked me. I was like, what? This was crazy. I was like, Scorpio Sky is now your two-time TNT champion. And I could do nothing but applaud because I wasn't expecting it. I was like, wow, okay. So there's that. I mean, and look, this crowd got behind Sammy and Lambert more than they have in the past with other cities. I don't know how that's going to go, especially when they're done. If you come off of Sammy, because Sammy has so much heat right now, and Scorpio Sky is supposed to be a heel, but he's getting cheered, and then they do that tease at the end with Frankie Kazarian in that possible match. So, I don't know. Now, this title once had long-term reigns. Think about it. How many people held this title in the company's history, and how long those were? Some people had 6, 8, 9 month reigns, because there hasn't been that many champions. But now all of a sudden it's currently a hot potato, which I'm not gonna kill. I don't have a problem with it. It happens occasionally where it's good to change it once in a while and just to get people guessing. Oh, this way we know that. Yeah, look, I don't want to know the finish. I don't want to go into a match and go, I know who's gonna win. I surprise me once in a while, and they did here. They did. But look, eventually the title's going to settle on somebody, and they'll be a champion for more than a week or two. And I thought Andrade was going to be that guy. It looked like they were pushing him after he beat Darby. Then they do a return match, and he loses the coffin match, which you knew was going to happen. That was predictable, too. You put him in a coffin match with Darby, he's not winning. Oh, I don't know. That's just questionable booking of Andrade. They obviously didn't view him as much as Triple H did in NXT, where he was champion. And, by the way, I need to go see that match because I saw the headline recently about the Triple Mania show that took place, I want to say, last night in Mexico. And apparently Andrade went one-on-one with Bandido, so that should have been crazy. I look forward to seeing that when I can get my hands on it. So where was I? Yeah, with the coffin match. And then, right, so ratings were down again. Pardon me there. I found myself. Ratings down again. And listen, the ratings were down now for 3 straight weeks. And of course, everyone's going to say NBA playoffs. But in this particular instance, on that Wednesday night, you had a really bad game because the Bucks were up 3-1, and you knew they were going to close out. The Chicago Bulls showed almost no heart in this postseason aside from that game 2 win. And they just got obliterated both games at home. And you knew the Bucks would do that. I told people who bet on sports, I was like, if I could bet on my own team, I would. And I would make about like a bandit right now because the Bulls got destroyed again. And there was not much to see. So for you to blame the ratings coming down again, now they're down to 921K. Look, it's still a respectable number. Obviously, there's still the demo came down a bit. So they were a little upset about that. But look, the numbers keep coming down, and you can't blame the playoffs. And to me, anyway, look, I guess people want to see Giannis, so regardless of a blowout, they want to watch Giannis. So, I mean, to me, that number's still disappointing, but long-term picture, we'll see. Let's just hope they have TV, as I just mentioned earlier. Oh, I forgot to mention, Phoenix did return. They had the blackout with, of course, memory serves me. What's in the House of Black? Excuse me, the House of Black. And then the lights went out, and you had Penta, and then all of a sudden, Penta and Pac, and then Phoenix appeared, and he killed everybody. So they're all dead. No, I'm kidding. They're not dead. We get. Let me see what happened here.
Okay, so that was the end of Dynamite. Although Phoenix didn't end Dynamite, what I mentioned earlier with Sammy ended Dynamite. I want to explain something that happened on Rampage that infuriated me to no end. I just talked about this with people in group text messages because it really this is why wrestling doesn't get heat. This is where it's lacking in emotion. Fans don't care. So we get this moment in the match. We get a qualifying match for the Owen Hart Foundation, Swerve against Darby Allin, which is a great match because the two of them have history wrestling in the Northwest together. This is where they broke in. So they've had multiple matches in the past already. So there's a story. So we get the spot where I want to say Darby suplex Swerve, I believe that's what it was, on the outside to the ring. Now, a lot of times that is a move that's just teased but doesn't happen. However, lately in wrestling, they're now doing that move a little bit more, which of course is going to kill the move because now it's not going to mean anything when guys are just rolled back in and not pinned. Just like the quote-unquote hardest part in the ring, the apron is used and people don't get pinned by it. So what does that mean if it's the hardest part in the ring? Why tell me that? So, like I said, they usually tease the spot, but now they do it. So both guys go down, they're outside on the floor and selling very well. Darby and Swerve really doing a great job. Ref Aubrey comes out and she checks on both of them. But then she stays out there for what appeared to be an eternity. And I'm over here questioning, when are you going to get back in the ring and start counting to 10? That is the ref's job. Count to 10. I mean, and so she goes back in, and before she could even get to 3, both wrestlers are back in the ring. I think Darby threw Swerve in, if I remember correctly, and I'm yelling, what the fuck? I'm like, what is going on? Why is this happening? I'm like, why aren't they getting heat from the crowd by having both guys struggle to get back in the ring to beat the 10 count? I mean, you could even have a scenario where you have the one guy get in at 8.5 or 9, and then the other guy is still out there. Then you have the announcers talking it up, saying, will Swerve beat the count? Darby Allin can advance into the tournament. If Swerve doesn't get in, 9, and the crowd's behind him, and Swerve trying to get in, and before the ref gets 10, Swerve gets in the bottom rope, and he breaks the count. The crowd would get into that. You don't build that emotion with the fans anymore. They don't care. And, I mean, look, and the problem with that, I'll talk about that later in a second, though. So then, I mean, that's the point. You want to get the crowd into the count. And it's my issue is not just AEW. I think it's modern wrestling in general. They have no clue how to generate crowd emotion. If you watch a WWE show, it's almost like it's an opera or it's Broadway where nobody's saying anything. There's very little noise. Everyone's quiet. And you can hear a pin drop as you watch WWE. And you're like, listen, other people have said this, I'm going to repeat it, that WWE doesn't make the crowd care about the wrestling. Everything else is like the promos and the backstage, and the wrestling is secondary. And that's a fact. You're like, why do we care about the wrestling? Vince doesn't care about the wrestling. So it's like, get the crowd to pop. And then that's another thing. It's stupid to have the ref out there so long and not start the count once knowing both wrestlers are okay. Now look, we talk about it's a work sport, I get that, but it makes it look fake when the ref is out there and then guys just run back and they get back into the ring. It just, I hate it. It bothers me. Because once she knows that they're both okay for real, like nobody's injured, get back in and start your 10 count. I almost forgot something. I just remembered that Jericho was at commentary for this Rampage, and he's not necessary. Listen, I don't know why they have him there. Starks, Taz, and Excalibur are plenty, but he's still there. And out of nowhere, I forget what segment, he gets attacked by Santana and Ortiz. And they hit him a couple times, like it was a slap, some really bad slaps, by the way. Jericho goes down, he gets into the fetal position. Security comes out, and it ends. That was it. It was like 20 seconds. You would think Santana and Ortiz would be trying to kill him after Jericho just fireballed Eddie Kingston 2 days prior. But that didn't happen. I'm like, what kind of a receipt is that? I mean, they barely hit him. It was like, what is going on? And then to make matters worse, Jericho stayed on commentary. Like, how is he still out there? He should be injured. And they barely touched him is the point. It was just so poorly done. I was like, this is weak. But, oh well. So, the main event was Samoa Joe defending the ROH title, which they finally announced, which was great to hear. And it was against Trent Beretta, who cut into the business, I think, with ROH, along with WWE early in his career. So he's had, and he got into the ring, and he shook the ring announcer's hand, Bobby Cruz. By the way, Bobby Cruz, when you hear him announce the wrestlers, and then you hear Justin Roberts announce the wrestlers, which guy would you rather have? Bobby Cruz, and I don't want to knock Justin Roberts, but Bobby Cruz sounds like the professional. He sounds like the buffers. He has that buffer voice, that bass, that's legitimate and not forced like Justin Roberts with his John Moxley. Oh, that's so annoying. I hate that. I can't take that. It's so annoying. But, and then they had Ian Riccaboni out there, the ROH commentator, play-by-play. And listen, people love Excalibur. They love him. But when you hear Riccaboni, he sounds more professional. So I don't know if there'll be a time where Tony Khan goes, well, I got this guy here. Let me use him. And it doesn't mean like Excalibur will be gone. He can still work other shows. But for my Dynamite, or, you know, I want to have Riccaboni out there, you know, for Rampage and the other 1,000 YouTube shows that they have, Excalibur can work those. But I think Riccaboni sounds more professional, and a lot of people agree with that. I've heard people say it. I like to talk about wrestling, in fact, that I think it's dying, and in terms of attendance and ratings, and, you know, people love to talk about social media presence, but if people aren't going, if people aren't buying the merch, you know, unless Fox is going to give WWE millions of dollars going forward, and the ratings are still going to be mediocre at best, and who's going to care? Who cares? And I looked at a rating this past week, and New Japan Pro Wrestling is on Access TV, which has a deal with like Impact also, and they're on there and they barely draw any ratings because they kind of own it through, I forget the name of their company that owns it. But this past week, listen to this, in the key demo 18 to 49, New Japan Pro Wrestling drew a 0.00, and they had 46,000 people watching it. Now, mind you, Access TV is in 50 million homes compared to the 90 plus that TBS is in. So unless you want to argue with me that the other 40 million homes are all New Japan Pro Wrestling fans who don't get to watch Access TV, this is a bad number. Because, look, I respect New Japan Pro Wrestling. I watch it. I enjoy it. I think the matches are good. But then, of course, they do too much of the, you know, the 1-2, the yay boo. Let's hit each other. Let's slap each other. Let's punch each other every match. We even got it in the Joe Beretta match. And that match was relatively fast. But why do we need it every match? I don't need it. And we get it, and it's too much. You know, and some guys, you know, at least in this situation, it was more realistic, because when Beretta hit Joe one or two times, Joe just leveled him with a clothesline, and that was the end of it. But sometimes you'll get these, like, junior heavyweights, as I've mentioned on this podcast multiple times, who will sit there and stand with a heavyweight, and they'll be slapping each other and hitting each other. You're like, this guy has 40, 50 pounds on him. He should be down on the floor by now. And that doesn't happen a lot of the times in New Japan, and they lose the psychology in that, too. So I feel bad for them that their ratings are this low. I mean, they're doing the tours. We know they're going to have the joint pay-per-view with AEW coming up soon. So that's that. For those who care about WWE, some of the post-WrestleMania roster cuts finally happened that people were scared about, as we are every year. Obviously, last year was really bad, where they had not only post-WrestleMania cuts, but they continued almost throughout the year, where more and more people went. So this is the first installment, at least let's hope it's the last for the people still there. Although I'm sure some people would say, release me, set me free, I don't want to be here anymore. Dakota Kai, Malcolm Bivens, two of the more notables. If you know the other people, God bless you, I don't. So, And these cuts were a little bit later than normal, too. Did anyone see that Lashley rope incident? Oh, my God, that was frightening. The top rope just gave out, and all the ropes were like, what just happened? That was scary. I don't know if he's okay. I hope he's okay. I didn't follow up on the story to see if he's okay. But I imagine he is. I tried to watch SmackDown on Friday night, and it is painful. It is such a bad show.
I mean, I used to say that about Raw, but now SmackDown is approaching that. It's really bad. Like, I can't deal with certain segments, and I'm not even going to bore you with it. I'm just going to tell you, if you're not watching it, you're not missing anything. It's so bad. And you can look around the building, by the way, and see how dark it is, because they're now having to cover up those empty seats in the upper levels. There's no one there. It's, like, really bad. I mean, I saw some recent attendance figures for WWE, and they're still doing the 6,000 and 7,000, which is respectable. I don't know if you want to use that word, but when you think about it, like, just 20 years ago, these buildings were filled with 18 to 20,000 people, and now they've already lost half of that, if not more, on some shows. Some shows are peppered and papered, and, you know, some they do 4,000 or 5,000. I don't know what the future holds, but it's not good. I don't think it's good in the immediate future. I don't know what brings in the next 20 years of wrestling, but I told people recently, I don't know if wrestling's going to have a network TV deal in the next 20 years. I think there could be just, like, internet or like, apps like Peacock and other things where it's just not on TV anymore. And it's just going to become... I don't know. Let's hope not, but hopefully something revives it where we get another boom. That'd be great. Well, thank you again for listening to another edition of Morton's Law Podcast. I appreciate it. Check me out on Twitter, Morton's_Law. Spread the word and the love if you can. And I'll check you guys out again next week. Take care and God bless gay sex.